Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Frozen heroes. Gonna tell you about frozen heroes. Gonna tell you about
comic books,
costumes,
facts,
boots,
and other stuff.
In this week's issue, Stan Lee and Fellini?
Welcome into Bros, Foes, and Heroes. I'm Zach, joined as always by the Mighty One.
Mighty One.
Mr. Mike.
It Mighty sounds like, Mike. It sounds like I'm a dog food.
Kind of. Well, we had
Mighty Mutts.
Growing up, there were Mighty Mutts. We had Mighty Max, which was this little plastic, like, toy figure.
Yeah,
and it had little play sets that were small, that it was like, it would look like a snake's head and you opened it up and it had like different
it was the boy's version of Polly Pockets.
Yes.
Yeah. I ever tell you about all the illegal Polly Pockets I had one time?
No. I don't know how we would have gotten on that topic.
I was running a dollar store. Like, I was managing a dollar store at one point.
Okay.
The one over by Waco High.
Uh-huh.
We had to hide the deodorant because people would run in and steal it. You had to move it to the back of the store.
Mm-hmm.
But we would get all these pallets of like toys and stuff in, and they would be, let's say, irregulars.
Okay.
Because they were choking hazards or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we would have to zero them out. And zero them out means that you would mark them down to a penny, and that marks them off of inventory.
Yeah.
Right? I guess it's the system. I don't know. Whatever. I also broke my foot while I was there because I dropped a sunglass display on it.
Just not a good
experience
there.
No, and I would buy all of the toys from the dollar store, and then I would take them and sell them. So there's probably some kid out there that choked on a Polly Pockets because I sold it.
All right, Mike's back in his toy bootlegging days. Oh, wow.
A lot of stories, Zach.
I always enjoy them. I have stories for us. I know that
cool.
It looks like we might be talking about Daredevil, but no, we're going to continue our conversation from last week still to keep talking about kind of the history of Marvel Comics.
I'm enjoying
in
this.
A sense.
This is cool.
Just some things that hit me that I thought, oh, I have that at home. I can bring it to point it out when it happened. And also just tell cool stories along the way. So we covered the Fantastic Four last week, which is essentially the birth as Marvel Comics kind of as we know it.
Right, right.
From there and the popularity that begets.
Yeah.
You start to see the different comics pop up like The Incredible Hulk. We have Spider-Man, Thor. Eventually it leads to the Avengers, Iron Man, like all the ones that you think and you know from early Marvel.
Sure.
It starts with Fantastic Four. And they continue to grow in popularity, Marvel does.
Uh-huh. Well, they were cooler.
Exactly.
They honestly were cooler because they had a sense of humor in them.
That's the thing is, if you look at the time too, they were marketing themselves more towards college students and stuff like that too. Like when Stanley went and spoke at a lot of college campuses.
Oh, really?
Whereas...
That would have been cool to be at a college campus and Stan Lee comes and gives a talk.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like the Mighty Marvel or the Mary Marvel marching system. I can never
whatever
get all the acronym together.
Sure.
Was like, you know, directed towards college students.
Wow.
For them to be. So they were more of a cooler, hip kind of.
With their pre-written scripts.
Well,
Stan, hand me that bottle. You know, but, things like that.
But, you know, and so they were kind of seem cooler like that, too. One of the stories, though, just to kind of show that I always think are funny when I come across these. With their popularity, of course, new characters will want to be created and want to be made. In the book that I'm reading, Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe, this is actually read through number two, and I have part of it marked for this story here. Yeah.
Did you buy it from the library?
No, I checked it out.
Oh, I figured maybe it was one of those library sales. You know how they sell
the books? Friends of the Library?
Yeah.
I go to those sometimes. No, this one is I need to buy my own copy, but I've checked it out both times when I've read it. I'm cheap. Whatever.
I got you. So well, it's only 12 cents, it says right there.
So. Well, no, that's based off the cover.
I get it. I bet that thing. That is a very thick book.
It is. It's like 400-something pages?
Yeah. What? $29?
Let's see if it has the price at the time of it.
A lot of them have prices on them.
Yeah, but at least when it came out. This book came out. It's a HarperCollins.
HarperCollins.
$26.99.
I was pretty close.
Yeah.
What's it called? Marvel
Comics, The Untold Story. It's a really good book. And in there, we're going through and rereading to kind of refamiliarize myself with how Marvel is at this time.
Right.
You kind of rediscover stories. And one of them is this Daredevil one that's just so funny to me. But it also kind of fits in with how we've talked about. Yep.
I don't know why it's blue on Amazon.
I think they're different ones. Here. This one's hard.
Gotcha. Oh yeah, the hardback is orange.
See? Yeah.
Wow, how crazy.
I don't know, maybe it's like comic book covers, there's different variants. But we've talked a little bit about or a decent amount about the tensions between Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, and also Stan Lee and Steve Ditko.
Yeah.
But they weren't the only ones that were kind of a part of this group that were finding themselves kind of getting tired of how things were going. To tell that story, though, let's go ahead and tell just this quick little Daredevil story. So
he's blind, you know.
He is. So when they wanted to start creating this new character, Stan came up with this idea for Daredevil, and they hired Bill Everett. Bill Everett, we've talked about before when we covered some of the very first comic book characters, is the guy who did Namor. He created Namor.
Oh, okay. All right.
From the beginning, yeah. And he wrote the early stories of him. So Bill Everett, even at the time in the 60s, kind of comic book legend, you know, his name are.
Roman backwards, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So he is teaching at a college at the time when they ask him, hey, do you want to... Stan's kind of getting swamped with how popular everything's coming. He's looking for more and more artists like Jack Kirby, like Steve Ditko, where he can just give a plot point. And then they do all the heavy lifting, and all he has to do is go back through and dialogue everything.
Yeah. He wants to be more of like the executive producer kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, he wants to go out and speak. Like Stan is always was always great at.
He's a hype man.
Exactly.
You know,
and I think he loved always doing that. So he wants to be able to go out and do the college.
Speaking he was great
gigs.
At
exactly.
He really was
the college speaking gigs, things like that, and it makes sense. And you have to have guys you can rely on. To do things the way you want it to do.
Absolutely.
So
sure.
He gave the idea to Bill Everett, since Bill Everett obviously shown in the past that he could do that. Mm-hmm. Well, strapped for deadline and just time of working 14 hours a day at the university and then coming home to try to work on comics, he just couldn't get it done in deadline, turned into like 2/3 of the finished first issue here. And maybe it was Sal Brodsky, the manager or one that there at the time, hunted down Steve Ditko to like finish out the last 8 pages so they could get it done
Holy
in time
crap.
To get it out.
That's crazy.
So Bill Everett only after this first issue.
Can you tell the difference?
In the way the styles look, I don't know the difference between. No, yeah. I think Ditko did his best to try to.
Yeah, I got you.
Sure. I'm sure there's things if you look at, and I haven't looked
sure,
at close
I'm
enough.
Sure the minutia, if you really get down into it, you can tell.
But then after that, they handed off. Bill Everett doesn't do another issue. He might eventually. But he's off of Daredevil then after issue one since he can't meet deadline. Mm-hmm. So then they give it to Joe Orlando, who does his best for a bit until they bring in Wally Wood. And Wally Wood was, or as it says, Wallace Wood on here.
Wallace Wood.
Was a guy.
Because Wally Wood sounds like a ventriloquist.
A little bit. Wally Wood is a guy who another just kind of legend at the time in a way. He was handpicked by Jack Kirby to do all the inking on his national comic book strip. Like, everybody loved Wally Wood's work. There's still a, it's either, I can't, I'm off on the number. I think it's like 12, 13, it may even be more, of like panels, of Wally Wood's panels that always work that people still use now.
Really?
Of like he I'll have to pull it up and find it. So just a big get that was very heralded at the time that Stan Lee like made note to be like, hey, we're bringing in Wally Wood for, you know, this here to do Daredevil. It's going to be great.
It's like getting a free agent or something.
So
a sports team.
After a while, though, Wally finds.
How about that Wimby, by the way? Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't know. I watched them play the Rockets the other night, and Jock Landale had more points and more shot attempts than him.
Sure.
So.
Because I think Wimby was on the sideline most of the game.
Yeah, but still. So. I mean, he can't beat Jock Landale.
I know. It's going to be a fun season for both of us. It'll be a hell of a lot better than it's been the last few seasons.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Wally does get kind of tired of the whole, hey, here is what I want you to do. Plot it all, draw it all out, and all kind of.
Sure.
And he keeps kind of pushing Stan for, let me do this then. Like, don't just give me the idea. Like, let me actually do the whole issue.
Yeah. Well, it makes more sense, honestly.
Exactly. To which, there's another story in here that I'll tell after this, but let me find it. It's issue 10, right here.
What is dude's name with the hood over his head?
The Organizer?
Oh, I thought it was the same guy from, like, Winter Soldier, that guy.
Oh, Baron Zemo?
Yeah. Didn't he wear, like, a purple hood or something? Okay.
So, issue 10 here of Daredevil. They allow, or Stan lets Wally do both, but not without a little blurb in here, too. And I just like to read this bit. Two great surprises. I'm sorry, it would help if I didn't add awkward pauses in here. Two great surprises await you in this offbeat issue. One, this is Daredevil's first real mystery thriller. Complete with a zillion suspects, countless clues, and perplexing plot twists. Two, Wally Wood has always wanted to try his hand at writing a story as well as drawing it. And big-hearted Stan, who wanted to rest anyway, said, okay.
And Stan is writing this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
So what follows next is anybody's guess. But you may like it or not, but you can be sure for, you may like it or not, but you can be sure of this, it's going to be different.
I'll give you the reins, but I want to make sure people know I didn't have anything to do with this.
There's another one at this time. It might be Spider-Man 18, where Ditko's kind of starting to take the reins a bit more, where it says, hey, people always complain sturdy Steve Ditko's doing all the work, how come Stan Lee's name's first? So I went ahead and I'm humble enough to make it happen. And I know it's tongue-in-cheek, and it has... you know, pencil drawn by Steve Ditko first and then written by Stan Lee underneath it. And even though it's second, Stan Lee's name's bigger.
Yeah.
And Wally did not like this.
I bet he didn't.
Ditko hated it. There's a story in the book, speaking of Ditko, where I think Stan Lee in one of the opening blurbs there writes, like, it was voted by Stan and Steve is most likely to succeed. This new issue of Doctor Strange, right? And look it over. And Steve Ditko went back to him and said, I wasn't like, nobody talked to me about that. What do you mean? It was picked by both of us. So Stan Lee had to go and change it to, it might have been Baron Zemo or like some other villain instead of Steve Ditko's name.
What a wonderful
for them succeeding.
Guy. Yeah.
Anyway.
That's insane.
Well, no. So Wally sees that, right? He's kind of already done with it by the time he turns that in. He leaves. I think he goes to work for DC, but he's done dealing with Marvel.
Sure.
I love this. I made sure to go ahead and include this in here, too. Here you go. Where it ends, you may not like it, but you can for sure be, this is going to be different. And this is a quote from Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe.
So rough.
A frustrated Wood immediately decamped to the fledgling Tower Comics to edit a line of superhero titles, and Lee assigned Romita to Daredevil based on his illustrations of the hero swinging through the air. Talking about Wood was already working at Tower Comics when he saw Lee's letters page remarks for Daredevil 10. And this is what he said, what Stan Lee said in a letters column then about that issue, because that's the last issue Wally did.
Right.
Wonderful Wally decided he doesn't have time to write the conclusion next ish, and he's forgotten most of the answers we'll be needing.
It's so much inside baseball, you know?
So, sorrowful Stan has inherited the job of tying the whole yarn together and finding a way to make it all come out in the wash. And you think you've got troubles. Would turn to his Tower colleagues and fumed about Stan Lee. He'd hold the rage for years to come.
Yeah.
Boy,
that is something you really, when you start diving into these stories, these guys do hold a grudge.
Yes.
For a while.
For a long time. Yeah. There is nobody that, at least in my, athletes maybe, but yeah, athletes maybe. And comic book artists and writers who seem to hold grudges forever.
Even athletes seem to let go of it before some of these guys, you know?
Some do.
Well, that's true.
It's so... I do that just to kind of paint the picture of how some of the artists are viewing Stan at this time.
Sure.
I'm not doing it to straight up just trash Stan Lee. I think we've talked about this before, and I'll say it again. No, I'm
just trashing
Stan Lee. I think we're all shades of gray. For everything that happens here that seems like it's like, I think that Stan Lee was a victim in some instances himself, in some aspects. So... It's not like
I would think so.
I don't think he was a terrible person.
Sure.
I just think he didn't. There's things could have been done differently on a lot of aspects, but
we can all say that.
Yeah, that's true. Sure. I mean, and to feel for him, like we told the story when he was first working there at Marvel after the war, when he had to let people go, of how he, like, Martin made him fire the whole staff. And it tore him up so much that he would have to leave and go to the bathroom between each person. That's like, I think that, you know.
That's just nuts.
It is. That Stan Lee had like he was a decent dude. But it's just to kind of show how all the artists were viewing everything going on at the time.
Sure.
And that gets us to what I found then, which is a Village Voice article, which speaking of how things stay with people for a while, it's another story. And this is a bigger one. And then I'm going to take us to... where essentially we kind of get to the end of an era at Marvel through the end of the 60s with this. But we'll go ahead and break all that down when we come back right after this.
Bye.
And we're back.
Hey, you know what I forgot?
What's up?
I forgot to tell you happy Silobration.
Is that what's going on?
That's what's going on this weekend.
I kept seeing things like, hey, park here. I was like,
Silobration. Yeah. Anywhere. Everybody's trying to make $10 by parking your car.
Okay.
Yeah, I almost hit a lady coming here because she was standing out in the middle of this. Yeah.
You shouldn't.
She was standing
that.
Out in the middle of the street with a big piece of paper that said $10.
Yes. Yes. I almost.
Like, lady, just get on the sidewalk. Kinda, it's okay.
Yeah. I almost swiped her a little bit too. She stepped out a
little
bit.
See? Same lady.
I know. Was it a neon green kind of?
Yeah. It was right over there. Well, I don't know if it's. I think it was pink.
It's right. No, it's just right. Yeah. Right down there.
Yeah.
Fourth.
Mine was over by Fabled.
The bookstore.
Oh. Yeah. Same lady. I'm sure.
I mean, she's obviously being effective because we both remembered her.
She is being effective until she gets hit and knocked across the street. Oh. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and get back to people being, I don't want to say petty because it's not pettiness because there's a lot of things. Some of this stuff here is a little bit more because it comes down to just overall credit and money that they feel owed to them in some aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Ditko, let's go ahead and wrap up or just kind of put on where he fits into all of this in a nice TLDR version of all this. There's a lot to dive into, and you can point at certain things and certain aspects that lead to him kind of leaving in a way, but it all has to do with him wanting more free reign with Spider-Man to create the character he wanted and do the stories he wanted. And Stan wanting to be able to tell him, no, we're going to do it this way. You know, creative differences.
Sure, sure. Stan wanted to control all of it for the most part, I would think.
If you're the head of, you know.
Yeah, no.
The reason that there is like a giant Marvel, you know, connected universe is because of Stan Lee.
Yeah.
So I think in his head that he had visions for how everything was supposed to kind of work out in a way too.
I completely get it. It just,
no,
you know, I can see how big personalities like that.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
Yeah.
But so.
Same as Trump.
So, Ditko.
That's
wanted,
the only thing wrong with Trump.
So Ditko wanted to be like focus more on Peter Parker the person, and obviously Stanley was like, "No, we're a comic."
Yeah, that
like,
makes sense.
Know.
Sure.
Anyway, it led to a bunch of things that just eventually deteriorated, and Ditko finally decided to leave. I found out again in rereading this that while he left, he wrote Jack Kirby a letter urging him to leave too. Like,
oh, wow.
Hey, let's mass exodus this.
Holy
and
crap.
At the time, and it's a lot of times, Kirby, and I think you see this a lot, I think of like my grandparents and stuff like that, but just people who were around during the Depression, like
sure.
having work and hanging on to work was
yeah,
very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think you would have ever seen Jack Kirby do that at the time without something else. So,
sure.
But so Ditko eventually leaves. Another little interesting Ditko tidbit, while Kirby and Lee created The Incredible Hulk, after about 6 issues, the first run, it goes away. It's not selling too well. They try to, when they're trying to revive things and bring stuff back, they ask Ditko, hey, you're knocking it out of the park with Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. That's another thing, is Ditko's Doctor Strange.
Oh, wow.
What else do you want to do out of these three? Like, they gave him the 3 titles, and one of them is The Incredible Hulk, and he picked The Incredible Hulk to do, and since it's been started back up, it hasn't gone back out of print. But the reason he wanted to do The Incredible Hulk was because he wanted to draw the New Mexico locales.
Oh, okay.
So there you
All
go.
Right.
Well,
I mean,
nice
it's
got
to be something in it for everyone, I
exactly.
would think. I mean, I you know, as somebody who certainly doesn't draw as much as they did, I know that I don't want to draw anything that I don't care about.
Exactly. But it's just funny to think that, I mean, I'm sure it's not like this, but in my head, it's, I'll draw that giant green guy just as long as I can draw Taos.
As long as I can draw a Mesa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get on to...
Maybe he's a big Wile E. Coyote fan.
Maybe.
Maybe that's what it is.
Everybody, while Marvel is reaching newfound success, a lot of this also is happening because...
Was DC plummeting at
so
the same time?
They saw a spike kind of with the Justice League at the beginning of the 60s.
Yeah.
And then
well, that was the whole thing that got kind of Marvel started, right?
Exactly.
The Justice League.
Yeah.
See, I remember something.
There you go. And
every
then thankfully in the 60s for DC, Batman saved them.
Yeah.
At least the TV show did.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
So everybody loved the TV show. And it was, I think, you know, debuting new episodes twice a week.
Was it really?
Think about that. Yeah.
Holy
twice
crap.
A week. Granted, there wasn't as much TV back then.
Sure.
But at the same time, just cranking out that much
That's
TV.
A lot. Well, especially with all the costumes and all the makeup and all the stuff they had to do.
So
yeah.
It was like, hey, Thursday night, and it was like primetime too, wasn't
oh,
it?
Yeah.
I think it's
yeah.
Yeah.
I would think so.
So that kind of created a boom then for Batman comics, where in 66, it was the first comic to sell over 1 million issues in
wow.
forever because of the TV show. And that created then a new kind of found interest in the rest of comics again.
It was that Bat-Toosie dance.
Yeah,
that made
exactly.
It so,
or
yeah.
the anti-shark repellent.
Yeah.
The shark
repellent.
Not
anti-shark
repellent
or whatever.
Anti-shark repellent makes it sound like it
You want
sharks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think that
Well,
through.
You know, also, real quick, the guy who did the theme for Batman...
Tom Wilson is
We've
the producer
done a,
for it.
Yeah, we did
we
a
have.
We did a short run series about him. You did all the research and the writing and stuff, and it's great.
Invisible Icon, you should check
yeah,
it out. It
you really
is great.
Should. Go get it now.
I think about him.
We'll wait here.
Yep.
All right. Nice to have you back.
Yeah.
Hope
so,
you enjoyed that.
Yeah. I mean, it was about, I think, like 12 hours of audio, but still.
Sure.
It was all good.
Well, you know, a pause is a pause, I guess.
So Ditko's gone. I'm trying to just recap us where we're at.
Yeah.
Oh, but so Marvel, the Batman, so super popular, taking off, kind of creating another comics boom. Marvel has already sold off their rights before Batman got, you know, really big. So
yeah,
they didn't
sure.
necessarily capitalize off it too much there, but they are, still
Wait,
doing
you said
pretty
Marvel
well.
Sold off its rights?
Beforehand, yeah.
Before
Batman. The TV show got big.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha,
it's not what
gotcha,
they could capitalize
gotcha.
Okay. on.
Yeah. I understand. Gotcha.
But what happened then is with the increase in comics around this time, other people got back into the comics business. So you saw like Harvey get back in, MJF or Archie Harvey. Comics get back in. Well, Marvel and Martin Goodman, who was still owning Marvel this time, were worried that Harvey Comics were actually going to kind of push them out of the market.
Did those do really well? Like I think Richie Rich and
I think it's just the fact of just the sheer amount of rack space that they could get that they thought.
And Casper,
Baby Huey,
Baby Huey. Yeah.
What was the little redheaded girl?
That's
the cartoon, but still.
Yeah. All I can ever think of is the one that what's her name did on Saturday Night Live, the where she's always like screwing with people, like oh shoot, it was Kristen Wiig, and she was like, oh sorry, you know that thing. It always reminded me of like a Harvey character.
Kind of, yeah. But the interesting thing
it
is,
it wasn't Dot. No, Dot was Black Arrow, wasn't she?
I don't. It might have been Dot. I don't remember. Dot. Yeah.
Nobody's named Dot anymore.
Can you blame him?
Dottie.
So, Marvel is wants to push out more books, but at this time, due to their publication and just how much distributing they have, they're no longer able to kind of print a certain, like they can control the amount of titles they're able to print out.
Sure.
The publication company they use is actually owned by Timely Comics and by DC. So in a way, DC, yeah, that was what they were at one point in time. But DC in the 60s at one point in time essentially controlled how many Marvel comics could be out there. They had 6 books they could have a month. So that's why nobody had in the early 60s when you try to go back and you're like, how come there's not Iron Man 1? It's just in Tales of Suspense number 87.
Oh.
It's because they can only print like 6 books, so they would split the comics.
Gotcha, and you'd get
a Tales of Expense, Tales of
that's
Suspense
so
that would have like a, exactly,
yeah,
that would have like an Iron Man story in it and a Thor story.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then you could squeeze in multiple characters across that. I'm just kind of, you know, passing on.
No, it's great. Yeah, no, I love all this stuff. This is great.
So, while Marvel is at its kind of new peak of just popularity here, there is a article written. I think it's the Village Voice.
Okay.
And this is one that leads to some problems. And from what I've read, there's a little bit of interesting tidbit behind this.
Okay.
I'm not going to read through all of this, but I do find some of it just interesting to see articles written in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
This is by Nat Friedland. Not like it's, you know, things have changed that far, just, you know, the things that are referenced and stuff.
Communist hippies. That's how it starts.
I love the way it paints this whole article. It's called Superheroes with Super Problems. I'm sorry, it's from the Herald Tribune.
Oh, okay.
But it paints Stan Lee in just this very...
Where the hell is the
so
Herald
great.
Tribune? Is that a New York thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just this great, you know, genius in a way.
It talks about Stan Lee being a genius?
Yeah. Throughout.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Yeah,
I'm trying
I got
to find
you.
Somewhere. I love how at the beginning... I don't know why this is funny to me. On the drawing board is a big oak tag sheet recording Fantastic Four's last-ditch struggle to save Earth from being drained of all basic elements by the godlike villain Galactus. One picture shows cosmic force rays bombarding Manhattan. Stan Lee, chief writer, editor of Marvel Comics, tells production man Sal Brodsky.
Production man.
It's not clear that the rays are hitting now. He thinks for a few seconds and then pencils in zinc, zinc, zinc at the point of impact. No other comic book writer would have wasted that seconds to think what cosmic rays sound like. They would have just written pow or zap or something equally conventional.
That seems like a very broad brush you're painting with there.
So I'm just, it's very much a...
No one else would have thought to do this. Only Stan Lee.
That's how this whole thing is kind of, it's very much a Stan Lee's the best kind of thing.
Was he paying them or what?
No.
I mean, I don't
know. Well, here's the thing. It's a young college kid.
Oh, okay.
He's coming in with a book, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
you show up and he tells you all this. I think there, I don't know if it's in this one. There's one where he talks about, like, he just
he probably just wrote it and gave it to
and he's like,
his
here,
kid.
This is what your interview with me is. I don't know if it's this article or if it's a different one. There's one where he talks about, like, just how he doesn't really, you know, talk to Steve Ditko anymore. Like, he's just like,
man.
Yeah. I
mean, they really had a falling out, didn't they?
Okay, here we go. So this is something that I need to talk about because this leads to a lot.
So Kirby and Ditko, he had super like big falling outs with.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
massive. While Mr. Friedland is there, he gets to be a part of a story conference, essentially where for the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Where Lee and Kirby are supposed to be plotting out what the next issue of Fantastic Four is supposed to be that they're coming. And it's a big one.
Okay.
It's a like the big fight between the Fantastic Four and Galactus or the Silver Surfer. I can't remember, you know, but it's, you know, it's supposed to be this big moment. And I'll go ahead and just, oh, here we go. I found the Ditko line too. I'll read the Ditko part and then I'll get right into the story conference part here. Probably, okay. I plot, I know this is great for podcast, me starting and stopping.
It's fine.
So here we go. This is just Lee's quote here. I don't plot Spider-Man anymore. Steve Ditko, the artist, has been doing the Storks. I think it's supposed to be Strokes, maybe?
The Storks.
I guess I'll leave him alone until sales start to slip. Since Spidey got so popular, Ditko thinks he's the genius of the world. We were arguing so much over plot lines, I told him to start making up his own stories. He won't let anybody else ink his drawings either.
You think that's actually how that happened?
He just drops off the finished pages with notes at the margins, and I fill in the dialogue. I never know what he'll come up with next, but it's interesting to work that way. That's his quote on Ditko right there in this piece. And then it goes right next to, actually, as I continue the article, Lee hardly ever writes out a standard picture-by-picture script anymore. He recently hired three assistant writers after 200 applicants flunked a sample Fantastic Four assignment.
Flunked.
But he doesn't think the boys are really yet ready yet for anything more demanding than Millie the Model and Kid Colt.
Millie the Model and Kid Colt.
Lee arrives at his plots
Do you have any idea what those are?
There were different comic books at the time. Kid Colt was a Western one, and Millie the Model, I don't know if it's like romance or like, I don't know, but yeah, okay. It was a comic book at the time.
Millie the Model. Don't know why that didn't take off.
Lee arrives at his plots in sort of an ESP session with the artist. He inserts the dialogue after the picture layout comes in. Here he is, and I guess it had pictures in there too.
Sure.
Here he is in action at his weekly Friday morning summit meeting with Jack King Kirby, a veteran comic hook artist, a man who created many of the visions of your childhood and mine.
A hook artist? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
The King is a middle-aged man with...
60s were wild.
It was. The King is a middle-aged man with baggy eyes and a baggy Robert Hollish suit.
Oh, my.
He is sucking a huge green cigar, and if you stood next to him on the subway, you would peg him for the assistant foreman in a girdle factory.
A girdle factory!
The Silver Surfer has been somewhere out in space since he helped the Fantastic Four stop Galactus from destroying Earth, begins Lee. Why don't we bring him back? Uh-huh, says Kirby. Suppose Alicia, the Thing's blind girlfriend, is in some sort of trouble, and the Silver Surfer comes to help her out. Lee starts pacing and gesturing as he gets warmed up. I see, says Kirby. He has a kind of high-pitched voice. But the Thing sees them together, and he misunderstands, so he starts a big fight with Silver Surfer. And meanwhile, the Fantastic Four is in lots of trouble. Dr. Doom has caught them again, and they need the Thing's help. Lee is lurching around, throwing punches now. Right, says Kirby. The Thing finally beats the Silver Surfer, but then Alicia makes him realize he's made a terrible mistake. This is what the Thing has always feared more than anything else. That he would lose control and really clobber somebody.
Yeah.
Kirby nods. The Thing is brokenhearted. He wanders off by himself. He's too ashamed to face Alicia to go back home to the Fantastic Four. He doesn't realize how he's failing for the second time, how much the Fantastic Four needs him. Lee sags back in his chair, limp, spent, like he's just acted it all out. He's exhausted. Kirby has leaped out of his chair. He was crumpled in. Great, great. The cigar is out of his mouth, and his baggy eyes are aglow. His high voice is young with enthusiasm. Here's the script, here's the spirit that makes the Marvel Age of Comics. You can bet Stan Lee hasn't lost the touch that won him three first prizes in the Herald Tribune's Biggest News of the Week teen contest back at Old DeWitt
teen
Chilton
contest.
High School. So...
Wow, that is a lot of
that story,
fake awards.
That story comes out.
Yeah.
Next morning, Stan Lee tells the story. He gets a phone call from Rosalind Kirby. Oh, Roz Kirby, Jack's wife. Essentially.
Roz Kirby is Roz Jack's wife? Okay, yeah, gotcha.
Is the inspiration for Big Barda.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad, but
well,
okay, sure.
here's the thing is they have no control over where the character went after, but when he made the character.
Sure. Okay. Gotcha.
and was essentially like, how could you like do that to Jack? They make him sound like an absolute just
buffoon.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah, they do.
And Stan says like, yeah, no, like I knew there, like, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially it's like, damn. Yeah, you're right. That's it makes me look like I did everything. Jack was, I think, was kind of hurt by that. There's a couple things that add on to this later on that adds to it. There's a history of Marvel Comics that we're going to get into because I have to read it all. So we're going to save it for the next little part where we get into Mr. Miracle here.
Sure.
But where Stan takes credit essentially for creating all these characters by himself later on. And it just upsets Jack so much that it kind of leads him to create things to take jabs at Stan. This is kind of part of the reason that's there, because what's not mentioned in that article that I've read, and I'm pretty sure it was Mark Evanier who worked with Jack Kirby later on and was his biographer, tells the story, is they had already had that issue of Fantastic Four planned out before the guy even got there.
Oh, wow.
They had already had the meeting. Kirby had had most of it already drawn out, that they had did it just for the kid being
there. It was all
so that's why Kirby's just like, because Evanier's like, why is he going to jump up and be like, let's do this just to play out something, you know, just to do that.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
go ahead.
I did pick up this piece of paper you were reading from.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part is where Federico Fellini calls him and asks to come see him, and then now they're buddies.
Oh, did you not know? Okay,
I didn't know Fellini.
Dude, Fellini is brought up so much with Stan Lee.
Really?
Seriously.
Oh, wow.
In
a weird coincidence, I was scrolling through Hulu this morning, and there's a Fellini movie on there with Ben Kingsley playing Fellini. Yeah, I want to watch that now. See if Stan Lee pops up, I guess.
Maybe. Here's what it says. Many months later, from the Sean Howe book again, when an account of the Thing's fight with the Silver Surfer finally emerged, Kirby had changed it and expanded it significantly. It appeared as the coda to a grand space opera, a brew of existentialism with high adventure for which he had done the heavy lifting. Despite his perpetual freelancer status, Kirby not only generated plots with Lee, but also was the primary force when it came to designing characters and pacing stories. By now, he was, in a sense, the director of the films they made together, composing each shot and driving the narrative with the moment of his images. Lee said, I don't see him for a week, he told one interviewer. He comes back a week later and the whole strip is drawn, and nobody knows what I'm going to see on those pages. He may have come up with a dozen new ideas, you see. Then I take it and I write it on that basis of what Jack has drawn.
Yeah.
He's broken it down to continuity for me. He's drawn the whole thing, actually. I put in dialogue in the captions, so he doesn't know exactly what I'm going to write, what words I'm going to put in their mouths. I don't know what he's going to draw. But the whole thing had already been planned out and acted out.
Yeah.
So Kirby's not going to sit there and react out things for this, which is kind of, you know, on Kirby for doing that.
Yeah.
But, and then the way it's portrayed, and it just kind of, I think it kind of hurt him.
And yeah, it's like a little play, just a dog and pony show.
Exactly.
Is what it was. You know, the thing I took out of that is that all of them were contract workers.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was like a 1099 employee?
Yes.
Wow.
So it's very much like pro wrestlers.
Yeah.
So we've talked about that too, right?
Uh-huh. I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah, you're just a contract worker.
Yeah. That's why you used to see wrestlers go from one thing to the next thing or whatever.
But when it's, they don't have insurance because of that too. So every time they get injured and stuff, it's on them.
Sure.
But
you ever seen that movie, The Wrestler?
Yeah, with Mickey Rourke.
It's really good.
It is good.
It's a good movie.
It is really good.
Even if you don't like wrestling, it's still a good movie.
Yeah. But they were all contract workers. And that's part of the reason, like, Kirby kept... spoiler alert, in a sense, but it's you can just look up and find out. Part of the main reason that he leaves Marvel is contract disputes and him not feeling that he's getting what he's owed and what Martin Goodman has told him multiple times that he's going to get.
Sure.
With the
well, if they were regular employees, exactly. Maybe it would have felt differently.
And here's the, and with the popularity that everything has, yeah. There's action figures everywhere.
Fucking
there's cartoons everywhere. There's like Jack Kirby is seeing everything, all these things he created everywhere and not getting anything for it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Joe or Simon and Schuster with Superman.
Gotcha.
And so it just creates kind of a bitterness there for him, rightfully so. But it also doesn't help that he feels that he's not even getting credit in the own books that he's doing. I will say that after this article and the Roz Kirby phone call, it does seem to line up that no longer was it written by Stan Lee, written or, you know, plotted by Jack. It was presented by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
know, I feel this, it's funny because these kind of things pop up in all types of business.
Oh, for sure.
You know, where people, the guy that made Velcro, you know, the guy that invented Velcro, he was working for like 3M at the time. He never got credit for it. 3M always did. And they were like, well, you're employed by us, so, you know, we get all your stuff or whatever. I think about like the music industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's going through a big thing like that where all these independent artists, they put their music up and they get pennies, you know, and they don't really get the credit for it.
Yeah, no,
but somebody like Spotify, they can up their prices 15 times a year and it's fine.
Exactly. It is, it's very interesting to see.
Wow. Well,
there you go. So that's the next part. What we're going to get into next is essentially the end of the Kirby time at Marvel. Ditko's gone. You're moving into Roy Thomas eventually shows up, who's a big part of Marvel going into kind of the late 60s and into the 70s. But I'm trying to set us up to get up to talk about my favorite comic of all time, which was Mr. Miracle.
Yeah.
So to do that,
you
I felt like
that.
I do. So to do that and get kind of just the deeper kind of part of it, I thought that it's nice to do a history lesson.
And I don't know anything about him, Mr. Miracle. I have no clue.
Well, here's what's so funny to me, and it's probably just because I'm so nerdy about this, is I'm doing this whole history lesson and explaining to you Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's relationship.
Right.
And what the character itself in Mr. Miracle meant to Jack and then its creation process, just to set up to tell you about a book written and drawn by two completely different people that aren't necessary.
That's okay.
But it's just because that it's just so well on how it picks up on all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I just think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I thought this was just another little thing for us to dive into.
No, this
into
is cool, man. It's very cool. I love diving into this stuff. I've told you. It's I know some of it, but very little. You know, I just knew that those guys didn't get along and that sort of thing. When was this book written?
Early 2000s, I think.
Is it? Okay.
Well, I say like 2008, maybe.
Yeah.
No. It's later than that because it has talks about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. One of my favorite stories.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of my favorite stories when it comes to that is, so Marvel is bankrupt. And if I've told this story before.
No, you're good.
Marvel is having to deal with. Yeah, Marvel's having to deal with bankruptcy, and so they're trying to, find a way. Or no, they've just kind of come out of it, and they're working then on doing these movies. Sony.
That was 70s, early 80s, right?
Bankruptcy?
Yeah.
90s.
90s.
Into
2000.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Because, like 96, I think?
It was unbelievable to me that company could go bankrupt.
Yeah, well... It can happen to anybody.
Well, it's mismanagement.
It very much so. Well, the whole comic book, the crash in the 90s
sure.
was...
Sure, it's like baseball cards.
Exactly. It was,
yeah. Before,
yeah. And I think the only reason that DC didn't was because they've been owned by Warner. So they, they have a little bit of a...
I got a cushion.
It doesn't hit them as hard. But... shit, what was
it? But that was
about?
The thing that always made Marvel cool is they were kind of independent, you know, and they were very on it, you know. They had an edge to them.
So they're pitching, like, Sony wants Spider-Man.
Right.
Movie rights. I'm probably going to be off on my money-wise.
It's all right.
It's been a while since I've read the story. I'll get to it eventually, too. But they're meeting with one of the executives, and I think it's the deal. It's like, hey.
I would like to talk about that Spider-Man and the rights thing. I think that's very interesting.
Because it's the first one is, you know, it's like, hey, you can essentially have the rights to Spider-Man for $15 million, or you can have the rights to all the Marvel products for $25 million.
Wow.
And Sony, apparently the person there was just kind of like, you guys can't do shit with them. What are we going to do with them? We don't want that. Yeah. No.
Oh, boy.
All we want is Spider-Man.
What a misstep.
So then that leads to them going to Merrill Lynch and essentially using their characters as credit, or not as, but as collateral.
Wow.
To create the first Marvel movies.
Really?
If Iron Man doesn't work out, Merrill Lynch owns the characters.
Holy crap.
Yeah. That's it crazy. It's the characters that they use for Wave 1,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's Iron Man, it's Captain America, it's, you know.
Well, and the deal with Sony screwed us out of starting with Spider-Man, yep, you know, and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff.
Spider-Man movies are not good.
There's a lot of stuff to get into. Yeah. Yeah. And
maybe the first one's okay.
Are you talking about the Sam Raimi one?
I'm talking about Tobey Maguire, that first one.
Yeah.
That wasn't terrible.
The second one's good.
Yeah, it's okay.
The second one's really good.
Third one sucks. And that's Sam Raimi movie, so that's me saying a lot.
I know.
Because I love Sam Raimi, but that movie sucks.
But the second one's probably the best one.
There's Thomas Hayden Church in it, too. It's the Sandman.
Oh, I love him.
I love the dude, but
and you know,
God dang.
I don't mind Topher Grace as an actor, either. Like, the cast isn't bad.
No, it's fine.
I hate the stupid dancing and the...
Yeah.
There's a lot wrong
sure
with that.
Well, we've talked about this before, but the biggest thing wrong with that whole movie is the amount of villains in it.
Yes.
Just stick to one and you're fine.
There's three. Why? Yeah. You don't need three.
It's stupid.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll complain
Damn
about
you,
that more
Sony.
Later. As always, thank you guys for taking the time out to listen. Make sure you go ahead and check out RogueMediaNetwork.com.
RogueMediaNetwork.com.
For the other great podcast. Sorry, I should have waited longer.
It took me about a half second to realize what was going on.
You're fine. You're fine. I didn't give you.
I'm in celebration mode.
Okay. Sorry. Well, let's go ahead and get out of here so Mike can keep on celebrating. Thanks as always for taking the time to listen. Until next week, stay safe, everybody.
Golly con.
Pros and heroes, gonna tell you about pros and foes and heroes, gonna tell you about.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.